guys, and welcome to the Charge Podcast. Today, Mary Kessinger is back on.
Hello, everyone. Happy to be back.
I can't believe you were the very first person I ever interviewed.
That's crazy. It's been a year.
I know. When you post that on Instagram, I'm like, wait, it's already been a year. That is crazy.
Like, only a year, but also already a year.
Right. I feel like that always happens with time. It's just so insane. Yeah. I'm sure most people in the Charge community follow you on Instagram. But for those who don't, I'd love for you to give us an update on your life since a year ago.
Yeah, so about a year ago, I was publishing my first book, and that was just a passion project of mine that I knew I'd always wanted to write a book, and decided to just go for it, and I self-published it. It was Run My World, How I Empowered Myself Through Fitness, and a lot of the story was my journey with the Charge community and how I overcame my eating disorder. So it was a really big accomplishment of mine that I achieved beginning of the year. And then since then, it was awesome. I got promoted at my current job. I was no longer a contractor, so I was on full time, got health insurance benefits, which are awesome. And so it was a really big growth in my career. I moved into my own apartment, which is exciting, living by myself for the first time. I have been on a lot of trips. I started therapy, which was a great thing for my mental health, very much overdue. But I feel like this last year has been kind of figuring out what do I actually want in my life and kind of settling into a bit of routine. I also am a fitness trainer on the side, so I've been teaching at a new studio as well and just getting to learn more from different pros and just figuring out what I'm passionate about.
All the things, all the time.
Yes, always.
What are your goals for this year?
My goals, it's really hard for me to always set goals because things can change in an instant, but like I always set intentions for the year, and this year I couldn't decide between two, so I have two intentions. And the first one is to be curious and kind of experiment more and just put myself out there, not be afraid to explore and try new things, to be more creative and more imaginative. And then my main word that all my friends and family keep yelling me to practice is boundaries. I'm trying to practice more boundaries in my personal, academic, or personal, professional, just everything. Trying to say no more and protect my energy so I can do the things I really want to do.
Mm-hmm. Have you been doing that this January?
I have. It's been hard.
Tell me about that process.
Yeah, I feel like, so for me, my birthday is in early February, so any Aquarius is out there, it's our season's coming up. And I think that for me, January is always a time of reflection, deciding like things I've been putting off, okay, it's time to do them. It's time to really stop putting things off and just get done what I want to do. And so I was like, I need to say no to a lot of things that have been holding me back, been stressing me out, have been the cause of a lot of my anxiety, and just kind of with my family and different friends, just saying no and saying what I need. And you upset some people, but you feel better for yourself, and you know kind of like I have to put on my own oxygen mask first before I help anyone else. And so far it's been a bit of relief, and I know it's been a long time coming. So
yeah, that's good. Can you give an example of something that you had to say no to that was really hard?
A lot often, especially in a big city, there's so many fun things to do, and I always want to say yes to them all and try to do all the things. But like, just because someone invites me to a really cool event that I know would be really awesome and worthwhile, I have to say, no, I'm going to sit at home. And like, people often practice dry January, whether or not drinking to save money, to detox, whatever. For me, I've been like, I'm just going to stay in because it's good for me. And like, beginning at like literally one of the first days of the year, I fell running on the ice and I sprained my wrist. And
how's it doing right
it's
now?
It's better. Like, I'm not wearing my brace right now, and I probably should be, but my mobility's almost there. I just can't lift heavy weights yet. But that was like, I feel like whenever I get injuries, it's almost the universe telling me like, okay, slow down, sit at home. And like, it was hard for me to put on my clothes. It was hard for me to like shower. I felt like such a baby, but I'm like, no, I hurt my wrist. Like, I like ripped my, like, one of my good pairs of leggings. It was a sad day, but it was like, I told my friends, like, I'm sorry, I can't go out. If you want to come over, you can. And the ones who did, they did. And it was awesome. And like, people who didn't hurt my feelings. But it was just like, I need to take time for myself. And I was able to kind of do other things I wanted to do, like cleaning up my apartment, going on Marie Kondo. So it was like, it all worked out well. And I was able to say no to things. Like I should have maybe said no to more things. Like I shouldn't have been teaching right away. But I mean, like when I'm teaching the next day and I sprain my wrist, I'm like, no one was going to sub for me last minute. So I should have said no there, but it worked out okay. And I said no other times. And so I've been able to just kind of rest and heal in that way.
Yeah. Are there any other things that you want to let go of this year?
I'm trying to really let go of like being a people pleaser. I think that I know I struggle with it all the time and like implicitly and explicitly, but even towards the end of 2018, I like posted on my Instagram, like, what kind of content do you guys want? Do you want a blog? Do you want podcasts? Mm-hmm. Do you want interviews? What do you want? And a lot of my like friends who are also bloggers or influencers, they were just like, stop asking, do what you want to do. Just create the content you want to do that's like calling to you. And I think that's such a good wake up call. Like, yes, you want to create content, you want to share content that people like and will enjoy. But whenever I create, I do it for myself. Like whenever I want to write, I do it because something in me is like, okay, I cannot sit still until I've written out these words and feel like it's out on paper and it's I processed it. And so I think like, and I don't have to publish everything I write. So I think those kind of reminded me like create the stuff that I want to create. And if it all flows together eventually, it will. And like working on another book, I have a few ideas for different books I want to write like in many years from now. But I've the two ideas I've been stewing with in my mind recently, they've been kind of the culmination of just short stories I've written. And I'll write them even I'm on the bus or something. Just like when I have an idea and I just write it out, because it's like, if it gets stuck in my head and doesn't get out onto, I won't say paper because I don't actually, I type when I write. So on my phone and my notes on the app, then I feel like I'll just go crazy and it'll be in my head until it gets out and I just want to get it out there. And it's like waiting to escape. So trying to release more of the people-pleasing tendencies and just focus on trusting my gut when it comes to my passion projects instead of making my passion projects around other people's passions.
Mm. This is such a good segue to talking about creative wellness.
Yeah.
I am really excited about this. This is actually a topic that Mary came to me with, and I'm like, I've actually never even heard of creative wellness and what that means. And I know that you first kind of heard about the topic through a book called Creative Wellness. So let's start by just sharing what that topic is and what you learned from the book.
Yeah, the book is called Creative Confidence, and it's touches on a lot of design thinking, which if you don't know what that is, that's totally fine. But it's something I work with in my work a lot, and it's a way of thinking to create for the user, whether like you're in designing a website, whether you're designing furniture, whether like anything you're designing, it's all about the user and their experience. And that's where it like the school of thought comes from. And the book Creative Confidence is saying we are all creative, and somewhere in our lives, many of us have been told we are not an artist in whatever way. So we start to associate artistry with creativity, which they're totally different. And a lot of my day job working in tech and doing communications is kind of empowering people to feel like they can be creative, to be like more clearly communicating with others. And so with creative confidence, it's the idea that with small successes, you can kind of remind yourself where all that creativity comes from. And like, because really creativity is the ability to solve problems in unique ways. And everyone does that in their own capacity. It could be in like in your job, you're solving problems, hopefully, or else you may not have a job for long. But and even in your personal life, like you could be like, sometimes I'll be at a restaurant and I'm like, oh, this is going really slowly. If they moved this around, their operations would go more smoothly. And like if you have a creative mind, it means like you're able to see opportunities in problems. It doesn't mean you're negative and like always complaining like, oh, something is wrong with that. It's seeing like this could be improved. It could be improved by doing this, and kind of having that mindset in whatever you do. And then whenever you have that creativity, you're able to apply that to the problems you really care about, because there are so many problems in the world, but the problems you focus on are the ones you solve and do to make the world a better place.
Mm-hmm. What were your top three greatest takeaways from the book?
I think that it was a good reminder to turn fear into courage. I think that my problem, I say I'm a recovering perfectionist, being a people pleaser, and I fear failure. That's like a really big fear of mine, and I know a lot of people's, but in so much of the economy, if you want to be innovative and cutting edge, you have to embrace failure and know that you come with that comes growth. So if you mess up and do something wrong, you learn from it. I think there's like a million quotes about that we could probably insert there, but like you can't grow if you don't fail first. And so I think that turning that idea into like taking more risks with your creativity and knowing that like it may not all work out, but if you have like actually one of a really good number to think about, if you have 39 ideas, just throw them out there. At least like one of them is going to be good, but the good ideas often don't come out until like the 30th idea. So the first 30 may be kind of commonplace, stuff that you've heard before, you're getting influenced by other people. But once you get past the obvious, you can get to really creative ideas that are more unique and take a new approach to things.
What about two other takeaways?
I think that everyone is creative and honoring that in others. Because it's easy to be like, oh, well, someone is just really good at that. They're just a better creative person. But I think everyone's creative in their own ways. And just trying to look for that in people and looking for the best in everyone. Whenever you are in a group project, on the same team with them, and in your group of friends, if you're in a really annoying group text, just everyone's creative and you're not alone in it. And kind of remembering the bigger picture, like bigger collective community. And then another key takeaway would be, I think that creativity can be learned and improved. It's a skill you have to practice. Like if you aren't flexing your creative muscle, it's not going to get any better. So the more creative you are in one thing, the more that'll translate. Like in this last year, I've gotten back more into dance. I've always been a dancer, but then later in college, I was doing it less and less. I would do it like maybe once a week. And then I started going back into classes last year, and I realized how much that influences my creativity outside the dance studio. Just like, even if I'm not teaching, if someone else is teaching and seeing, kind of going through their creative process and like learning the routine with them, it makes me feel like I can think about my own problems in a different way. And it flexes that creative muscle, mm-hmm. really.
How do you think we can train creativity?
I think that trying different creative processes, I think that's like why hobbies are so good. Like personally, I don't consider myself a painter, a drawer, or artsy in that way. I'm much more of a, like, I can graphic design or thinking more digital design and content. And so for me, when I hear like, oh, do you want to do a wine and paint night? I'm like, no way. That's the last place I ever want to be. Mm-hmm. And like, that's okay. But just knowing that there are other ways to flex that creative muscle. And so like, while one person might really love going to a dance class, my friends may not like that. And that's totally fine too. They might prefer to do like, one of my best friends went to a gymnastic class. And I'm like, that's my worst nightmare. We took a gymnastic class together. I couldn't do anything. And I think just like knowing that everyone has their own release and things that they do. And I think you don't know you have those own creative releases until you try them. So a lot of people sometimes feel like, oh, I'm an adult. It's too late to learn hobbies. I didn't know anything when I didn't do that when I was a kid. Therefore, I can't do it now. And that's not true at all. Like maybe like learning a new language might be harder as an adult than a child, but like learning new skills, you can still learn new skills. You can do new things. And just being curious to figure out what those things are for you.
Mm, that is an interesting point. I feel like not many of us really have hobbies anymore.
Yeah.
You know? And so it's like, let's get back to having hobbies and figuring out what do I like to do? What am I curious about? And sometimes people are like, well, I have no idea. It's like, think about what you used to like as a kid.
Yes.
That's a great place to start.
Yeah. I think allowing yourself playtime, and that's been hard for me. I feel like the things that I enjoy for fun, I often find ways to monetize them or make them into a side hustle. And I have to be like, no, not everything has to do that. Sometimes I just want to have leisure time to do what I enjoy just because I can. It's a fun way to do that. And I think we're so often encouraged to be as productive as possible. And we're like inherently told to never turn off. And obviously that leads to burnout. And that's not a good way to set yourself up for success and longevity and trying to maintain your mental health and sanity. But we still do it. And we're like, we still catch ourselves in these like patterns like, oh, I don't have time for hobbies or doing fun things. And I think you have to prioritize them and also just find people who do the same things as you. So hold yourself accountable. Like I got some dance friends that was like, we know we love dancing, but then we're also like, oh, it just, we're so busy this week. And we're like, no, let's go. We know we're going to love it. We know we're going to feel so much better afterwards. Let's do it. And then even if it's like trying a different kind of dance class, that's like not your typical, whatever your outlet is, but just being curious and trying stuff, because like if you enjoyed it as a kid, you're probably going to enjoy it more now. And if you didn't enjoy it as a kid, you may still enjoy it now. You may not even realize it. Like you, I hated the outdoors as a kid.
Really?
I had really bad allergies as a kid. Like,
oh, that makes sense.
Why I mean, I lived on a farm and was allergic to like everything on a farm. And so I was like, I'm going to be the book one staying inside. And so I love to read and like love to do writing and things inside that were like with my mom. My sisters would go out to the yard with my dad and do yard work. And like that was kind of how it was. And then I remember you told me once, you're like, you're so outdoorsy. I'm like, me? Outdoorsy? No one's ever told me that before. But I think that I realized I like hiking and outdoors whenever there's not corn around me because I'm allergic to corn. So I think just kind of like realizing like what we haven't put like restraints on ourselves for what we think is possible, and what's because we just haven't tried everything. And like maybe your passion just hasn't been explored yet.
Totally. And just playing for the sake of playing, because I totally resonate with you on like, how can I write about this? Yeah. You know, like how can I be successful during this rest day and like have, we've like talked about this before, but just this checklist of things to do just so I can simply check it off for like my own pleasure. But it's like, how can I just get rid of all that and just play for the sake of playing, do something with no other motives than just enjoy myself.
Yeah. And if like, if no one knew you were doing that,
exactly.
Like whether it's not even just sharing on Instagram, but like just telling a friend or a family, like if you just didn't tell anyone you're doing it, would you still feel like it was fun to do just to like relish in leisure? And I think like we often forget the power of that. And it's fun to just like find those little pockets of joy.
I was reading on Amazon about the book, and something that it did say is that this book will help you become more productive and successful in your life and your careers. And I was really curious your take on this, because you are such a productive person, and this comes from, I'm sure, your recovering perfectionist style. But what do you think about that? And also, what productivity tips do you have?
I think that productivity, it's really a way of saying that you are committed to doing what you want to do. Because for me, if there's something I'm procrastinating around, there's a reason why I don't want to do it. And
say that again.
Yes. If I'm feeling unproductive and I'm procrastinating, it's probably because I don't want to do that. And I am a very intuitive person, trust my gut. And like, if something's telling me to not do something, there's probably a reason, and I want to like dig deeper. Like, why don't I want to do, whether it's maybe a project at work, something that doesn't vibe with me, and I feel like it's not my strength, not something that I feel is worth putting in a lot of effort to, or even if it's like, and I mean, I don't want to, I know, did you read that viral post about burnout in the millennial generation?
No, tell me about it.
I'll send it to you. And I have mixed feelings about it, and it's saying how the millennial generation, which I'm like technically like on the cusp of it. I'm like half millennial, half Gen Z. So I don't know. But like people are too burnt out to do errands and do the little things. Mm. And I mean, I get where the article is coming from, but I'm also like, okay, just get your stuff done. You kind of have to like suck it up. No one wants to do errands. No one wants to do little things, but it's like, you have to really just prioritize what you want to do.
What was the point of it? Were they talking about the different companies like Instacart and things like that?
Or? Kind of. I think it was just overall saying that people are just burnt out constantly, and it's no longer like a, oh, you hit that, it's time to recover. It's like, we're just perpetually burned out, which I can relate to. And I feel like no one plans to burn out. And that's the hard part, is because you can be like just constantly stretching yourself more thin and burning yourself on both ends. And you're like, be like, no, it's just temporary. And I think that's like, that's a lot of the things I see wrong with how I kind of approached my college education. It was like, so, okay, I just got to get to finals. I'm going to like feel burnout by the end of finals. Once they're done, I'll be able to relax. And I just work so hard and don't develop a good work ethic that by the end of the semester, I am burnt out, but then I do recover. But then like once you're post-grad, you don't have those deadlines anymore. Like once you get to, like I had a really big project and it was done in December, and I feel like I've been talking about it for months, and I was like, yes, it's done. And the next day it's like, babe, back to work. I don't get a break. And like, right. And that's kind of life, and you have to deal with it. So whenever you don't practice good productivity early on, it's going to be harder in the future to unbreak those habits. And so being able to turn your work on and off makes you more productive, because if you're like, if you incorporate those play times, if you know, okay, I'm going to work for these hours, I'm not going to keep my like email on me all the time. That there's like, I've had to learn to take certain work emails off my phone, and I've turned off almost all my notifications, because it's like, it doesn't need to be answered right away. And we have to draw boundaries. Again, I'll say boundaries. It's like curiosity probably many more times during this podcast. But I think you have to decide your priorities and lay down boundaries so you can accomplish those priorities. And then the stuff that you are procrastinating around, decide, is it really worth your time, or can you find a better way to accomplish them that's more worth your while?
Mm, so good. I love that. What does success mean to you?
I don't know. I feel like I've kind of toyed with that a lot. And I think success is, it's the culmination of many small successes. I think that if you are finding fulfillment in different areas of your life, then you're going to feel like you succeed. You do a little happy dance, and then you start setting goals for the next way to succeed. And it's never ending, and it's also never really began. So I think success would just be kind of finding your own personal fulfillment and then learning how that definition in your mind might change and grow over time.
Mm-hmm. In what area of your life do you feel the most successful?
Over the course of my life, I've been really good at succeeding in like the traditional way of academically and professionally and doing well in that way. But I don't know if I have succeeded as much in my relationships. And that's something I've been really kind of tuning into the last couple years and deciding with my friendships, my families, and like any personal relationship, like what actually fulfills me. Because I'm definitely an introvert. And so sometimes it's hard to be more open up, and everyone always thinks you're so outgoing, you have like, you're so friendly, and but you can still be very much introverted and need your own time. And so it's like, whenever I do want deeper connections, how do I prioritize them, and how do I feel fulfillment out of them? And I think I'm still trying to figure that out, because I think those are going to be more longer lasting than like the work goals I'm accomplishing and the career goals I'm accomplishing. I think that those are definitely very fulfilling, but the end of the day, they're not going to leave me feeling like, if I were to lose my job tomorrow, would I still be happy?
Mm. Do you think you would be?
I think it would be, yes. But I know there have been times in my life where I felt like if I did lose my job, it would be the end of the world. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's also, I try to get out of that mindset, like the very anxious, like the world's always going to end and you're never safe and secure. I'm trying to get out of that mindset, but I think that you do have to kind of ask yourself, like, okay, if I was going to have nothing tomorrow, what would be the most stuff that would matter to me?
Mm. And then for you, what would that be?
I think it would be the people in my life, but then I think also it'd be myself and knowing that, like, my independence and kind of like I can entertain myself, I can sustain myself, I can do everything on my own, my self-worth, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I know that having those deep connections was definitely something that girls wanted to talk about, and how to create those deep connections, especially after college. Can you give any tips on that?
Yeah, it's really hard. And I think that looking back, I don't know how many deep connections I had during college. I feel like I had a lot of different friends and different friends groups, but not many people knew me, like the full me, and saw me all as one. And sometimes I still wonder if they do see that, just because I feel like I wear different hats a lot of times, but it's like I'm still me at the end of the day. And I think that it does just take time, especially after college, whenever your friends, you're no longer on the same schedule. Like, some are still in school. Like, when I was in grad school, I was on a very different schedule than my friends who had started working already, or who were taking a gap year and traveling, or different, or just different ages than me. And we were all on different schedules, and just trusting in yourself, and then your ones you're connected with, that, like, even if you don't have the same relationship as you used to, it's still a relationship. And I think it just builds time to slowly expose more of yourself to other people, and, like, be more vulnerable, that you feel more trusted and able to connect with them more. And I think that whenever you do find those deep connections, you are able to feel more secure in yourself too. So it's cyclical. It's not one or the other. I know we kind of talked about how the creative confidence that comes with a community. And there's, when you, like, inherently, everyone's going to crave deep connections because we all want to feel like we belong. And I don't know about you, I've definitely felt like the black sheep on many occasions and felt like I don't belong anywhere, I'm so outside. But when you do find those deep connections, you feel so secure that you're able to take more risks, able to be more yourself, and able to really ask yourself, what do I actually want? If I'm not trying to please anyone else, if I'm not trying to impress anyone else, what is my gut telling me at the end of the day? And it's really hard to take those risks if you don't have those deep connections within a community.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, I love everything that you just said. What do you feel like is a hat that you wear that most people don't see, and that you want people to see?
That's interesting. I think that something that's come up for me a lot in the last year is kind of funny, that, like, I cry a lot.
I
did so. And I, like, it's something as a kid, I cried all the time. Like, my family would say I was the crybaby, and I was like, yep. Like, I'll cry good, bad, nothing. I cried, like, any strong emotion. And that was something I really kind of covered up in, like, my early 20s, and was, like, trying to toughen up. And then everyone's like, girl boss, you're so tough, you're so, like, BA, all this. And that kind of added to, like, this, I was, like, trying to not show any vulnerability. And then I feel like this last year that all kind of came out, and I was, like, crying all the time. Like, oh my gosh, the amount of times I cried on, like, the CTA bus in Chicago, like, just, like, random things. And, like, I think it was just, like, I had held it in for so long. And I read a book recently that was interesting, Women Who Run With the Wolves, The Wild Woman Archetype.
I need to read this book. It's everywhere lately.
It was, like, came out in the 90s before, yes, I was born. I know. But it's, like, it was so fascinating. And there's, like, I could talk about this a lot, but there was one nugget I loved, and it was, like, the woman who is crying, let the tears fall. Like, there's a reason that those tears are coming. There's something that they're trying to, like, protect her from. And because, like, when you're crying, it kind of scares people away.
Exactly. That's why I want to work on not crying.
Yeah, and that's why I think, like, but, like, sometimes it's a protective barrier. And I think that, for me, it's been kind of, like, my way of being, like, help, I need help, and I'm being vulnerable because I don't know how to express I need help. And so a lot of friends have, like, there's been so many friends who have known me for years, and, like, since moving to Chicago, so, like, 6.5 years, and they've been like, I've never seen you cry, I don't know what to do, like, I want to help you, but, like, I've just never seen the side of you. And I'm like, what, how have you never? And I'm like, well, okay, yeah, you're right, you haven't seen the side of me. And so I think that hat's kind of been coming out, and, like, I'm a very emotional person, and then when people are like, you don't seem like it, and I'm like, I'm like, what? Where's this like disconnection coming from? Because right. I think that I'm so deeply emotional, and I think that it's a really good part of me because I'm able to empathize more with others and connect more deeply with others. Like, hey, I feel you. I'm right there with you, and that's why I do have good connections. So trying to like not hide that hat so much, and then be like, this is a very important part of me, and like. Mm-hmm. I cry, but cry with me. And like, yeah. You know?
Ooh, I love that. Do you remember the first moment that you cried? Like in the past year, and it just really, almost like you had that release and you did it in public and it felt good and allowed you to continue crying more?
I'm trying to think. A lot of times I've been like embarrassed. I'm like, I really should not be crying right now. But I think that there's been a couple with my friends and it was just kind of like catching up with them. And then it like tears came out and I was like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. And they're like, don't be sorry. And it was just like, it was good to like get the hug afterwards and be like, yeah, you're not alone. And it's okay to cry. So yeah.
I love all this so much. That is actually something that we wanted to talk about is just insecurities and challenges that we've overcome in the past, and obviously showing emotions is such a huge one. What is a fear that you are really working on right now? You talked about all the different things that you want to release. Is there anything else that you are kind of working with?
Well, it's funny. You gave me the book
Sight Shift.
Yeah. Yeah. And you gave me a couple years ago, and it's funny. I feel like I've written about that a bunch, and I'd be like, my biggest fear, like my deep fear, is the fear of judgment. But then I reread the book couple months ago and I'm like, that wasn't even one of the fears, like I just made that up. So I'm like, I don't know where that came from, but somehow that really resonated with me. But like, I read the book again, and I think my fears have definitely changed, but my fear in the last year has been like, if I'm not there for myself, no one else will be. And just constantly feeling like I have to be independent because no one else is gonna be there to support me. Like, if I fall, I gotta be the one to catch myself. And so like my fear is a lot of times failure, but it's because I feel like I'm going to have to figure it all on my own. And so kind of, again, being open to being vulnerable and trusting other people and realizing that like, okay, yes, I can be independent, but I don't have to be. And then making sure I'm just not giving that power to anyone who's undeserving. Like, people who I trust, they have to earn the trust, and kind of going with that. And I think the biggest challenge for me is feeling that sense of security without needing affirmation. Like, this is one of your fears too, right? And it's so hard because like one of my five love languages is, like, my main one is words of affirmation. And that's how I grew up, and my parents talked with me, my siblings talked with me, always with love and words of affirmation. And that's how I know I can trust someone, is if they tell me. So if you don't tell me, I like create a narrative in my head that you hate me, that you change your mind, and like the most dramatic things. And it's so challenging to overcome that and just start to like recreate the narrative in your head that you don't need that. And like so my boyfriend said a few months ago, and he said that like, because he knows that's like something I just struggle with, and he said that I could tell you every day how worthy you are of love, but like, I can't be the one to convince you of that. Like, you have to persuade yourself that. I'm like,
that's good.
I have some work to do. Like, that's so true.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, why would I put that into the hands of someone else to convince me of that? Like, right. That's not fair. And I shouldn't have to convince anyone else that they're worthy of love either. And I'm like, why? If someone told me, like, okay, it's your job to convince me of, like, I would be like, I'm sorry, no. So it totally makes sense. And I'm like, okay, yeah, it's just finding, I think, like, those hats that I often don't wear, like, being emotional and being, being a crier, trying to love that instead of, feeling ashamed for the tears, being like, you know what, that's a part of me. My emotions are a strength of mine. Mm-hmm. And maybe the tears can be embarrassing sometimes and scares people away, but, like, being emotional is one of my, like, as my therapist says, it's, like, my intensity is one of my superpowers.
Yeah.
And so being able to shift that narrative and own it is really important to loving yourself and being able to get rid of those fears and be like, nope, I'm turning this into my own story. Mm.
Have you been working, I'm sure you have, but with your therapist on believing that you are worthy? And if so, what are some tips that she's given you?
Yeah, and I think we worked a lot on it, and it's hard, and I think it's overcoming your, like, deeper fears. And a lot of it goes back to when you were younger. Not necessarily even, like, often people think, like, oh, you're going through your childhood stuff. It's right. A lot of, I mean, it can be more recent than that, too. But just thinking, like, what happened that made you feel ashamed? And I think that the subject of shame is so interesting because it's hard to define. And whenever something goes wrong in our lives and we get maybe something is poorly received, we get embarrassed. And it's different than being embarrassed, because feeling ashamed is whenever you say, not my actions were bad, but I am bad. And then you internalize that, and then you don't want to get back to that, the person that, the bad person. So you're always trying to escape that person that felt ashamed, and you're running away from that. And that fear is manifesting itself in not being your true self because you felt ashamed for it at some point. And so I think kind of like thinking through that, whenever you start to feel not worthy, asking yourself, okay, in this moment, why don't I feel worthy right now? So like if you were looking in the mirror and you saw, just like if you got out of the shower, looked in the mirror and you would say a negative comment to yourself and be like, why am I saying this? Where is that coming from? Where have I heard before? Was it on TV? Was it a commercial? Was it some mean boy in high school? I don't know. Like, was it so? Where did I start to hear that some part of me was not good? And where did I start to attribute that to shame? And then if you can like trace it back to a certain point or even like a series of points, and you're like, why would I think that? That doesn't make sense. That's not fair to myself. And then you start to like slowly tell yourself, I am worthy. I am loved. And it takes practice a lot. And there'll be certain days where I'll like, even when I sprained my wrist, I was so mean to myself that day. I'm like, oh, you're so stupid. Like, you shouldn't have been running at night. You shouldn't have worn those shoes. You should have been more careful. You should have been. And it's like, why was I so hard on myself for falling on ice? Like, that is like, I can't avoid that. I mean, okay, maybe I sat and bet, maybe I could have avoided it, but it didn't. And I shouldn't have to be so hard on myself for that. And being like, nope, this was a sign that I needed to slow down and take a break from working out so much, or maybe dance more. I've been dancing way more and I loved it, and that's been kind of my release. And so I haven't been able to do yoga because I can't do a plank, which is like really sad, but I'm like, I'm doing stuff in other ways. And so I think just kind of, you just have to take ownership of your own narrative and your own story. And because even though it sounds crazy, we all have the voices in our head that are constantly guiding us through life. And the second we make it our voice, the sooner we're going to be happy.
Yeah. I was just thinking about that. It's like the stories that we create are insane. Mm-hmm. Did you ever read The Untethered Soul?
Yes. Oh, it's so good.
So good. Yeah. It comes down to awareness. Yeah. And I think that really is the first step of just walking over that bridge, right? Because you first need to be aware that you are self-sabotaging yourself.
Yeah, and that's what I definitely recommend. Yeah, The Untethered Soul or any of the Brené Brown books. That's like my therapist.
I still need to read her. I haven't.
I recommend a couple that I think are like the best ones to read because she's got a ton. Mm-hmm. And she just speaks so authentically, and like she refers to them as shame gremlins. So we often just think like we're all alone. No one else is like me. No one else feels this way. But like we all have these shame gremlins that creep up on us and kind of tear down our narrative and make us feel bad about ourselves. And we have to be like, recognize them, be like, okay, I hear you, but shoo, you're done. You're out. And just actively putting those positive voices in our head.
Mm-hmm. Mm. I'm definitely going to read her books.
Yeah, they're good. And she's also just hilarious too. Like, really? She's like a sassy Texan mom, and she's like, because I don't know, whenever when your therapist recommends a book, you're kind of like, okay, because she's a shame researcher. Right. And I'm like, okay, what am I going to read here? But she's very good. Yes. Ugh,
you read so much books.
I love to read.
How do you absorb all the info? Like, do you have any processes that you do where you have takeaways from the books and you're implementing them in your life?
I wish I had a better answer for this, but like, I've always been a reader, but I've also always been a fast reader. And I think people who have read my book or my blogs know that I don't like fluff. I'm a very to the point kind of person, and I don't really care for the unnecessary details, even though some people, they love that and that's their artistry and that's their characterization. But like, if I'm reading a book, I just want to get the facts. And so when I read, I think I read quickly because I probably skim more than other people do. I don't really soak in the books and soak in their names and their details. And I
do you always read or do you do audio?
I don't like audio too much.
I've never tried it.
I want to try it for Michelle Obama's book because I've heard her voice is just like an angelic. So I need to read that or listen to that. But when it comes to reading, I feel like I mean, I still read it, but I skim more than others. And I think that a lot of like nonfiction books, I try to reflect on it afterwards. So I often feel like called to journal afterwards. Like I'll have a lot of thoughts and I'm just like, I read a book and I think about it and then I just write and get my thoughts out and I just kind of store it in my Google Drive and like, I don't know if I was ever going to read it. I kind of hope not, but it just gets the thoughts out there. And then sometimes I do like to go back and look at it and kind of see like, oh, what was I feeling like whenever I read that book? And I'm like, oh, right. That's kind of how that book made me feel. And then like someone asked me how a book was and I'm like, oh, I liked it. Oh, what did I like about that? And I'll go back and look at my notes and I kind of see it. But I think that I also just learned to read books that I like. Like I'll give it like 50 pages if I'm not totally invested and just get rid of it. And I think also I tell a lot of my friends too, I'm a big library person. I mean, I still have a ton of books in my apartment and I dream of having a giant bookshelf one day full of tons of books. I want one like the ladder you can like slide. I want that. but I don't buy books too often to save money for sure, but I like to consider it dating books. So I'll check them out of the library. You have 3 weeks to read it, so you're held accountable. You have to read it in 3 weeks or else you're getting fined for it. And then like if I love a book and I know I want to read it again or I know I want to lend it out, I'll buy it. But if I read it and I'm kind of like, even if it's good and I'm just like, I don't need to keep that on my shelves, then I just return it and that's that. And like I'll still have it, like, my library app. It tracks the books I've checked out, so I can still look to see what I've read. And I'd keep blogs of all the books I read. But I think just also kind of making, for me, that's my playtime. Like, I don't like watching TV or movies too much unless it's a really good show. But for me, it kind of puts me to sleep where I catch myself multitasking or on my phone. And I know people feel that way with reading, but for me, I'm like, if I'm in a book, I'm in a book. And so that's a kind of my playtime, too. And that's what I alternate between nonfiction and fiction to keep it kind of fun and trying other things. So
that's such a good idea on the library card.
I recommend it. And I think that, and like, I mean, I've never gone to a library and tried to look for a book because that sounds awful. But I use the app and I just looked the book up.
I didn't even know there was an app.
Yes, there's an app. So you look the book up, you put a hold on it because often the most recent books, there's going to be a long hold on it. Right. So you can have up to like, I think 5 books at a time on hold and they'll let you know when it's ready for pickup. So then you go and pick it up and you got it.
What library do you go to?
There's one, it's like the Near North Library, but there's one in Lincoln Park too by DePaul.
Okay.
They have them all around the city and that's what, and like, I know you can get audiobooks that way too. You can get a bunch of different things and it's just a good way too than to like feel, it's a different kind of pressure instead of like, oh, this book's on my shelf forever. I need to read it. It's like, okay, I've got 3 weeks. If I don't read it, I apparently didn't want to read it.
Right.
And like, if you don't read it, then it's like, you're not hurting the book.
No. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Hold me accountable to that, please.
I will.
I really want to get a library card. What book are you reading right now?
I just finished a book, actually. I was reading a book for work on storytelling. The next book I'm trying to read, though, it is a fiction book. I need to kind of break it up and go back to a little bit of fun. But it's called, I think it's called Not My Child, but it's kind of about a child getting kidnapped. I don't know. We'll see. I'll let you know how that one goes.
I really want to talk about creativity and body image, especially because when this podcast comes out, we will be doing the Body Positivity Challenge, which I am so excited for. You talked about how creativity is influenced by body image, and I want you to share what you mean by this.
Yeah. So like I said, creativity is all about solving problems and kind of being open to the world and seeing things with different perspectives and looking for opportunities to solve said problems. But one thing I noticed with body image, so I don't know if I just said it in this podcast, but I struggled with an eating disorder for a couple of years with body dysmorphia, so kind of seeing my body differently than it actually was, orthorexia, being obsessed with clean eating and eating healthy, and then for a while, bulimia, which is the binging and purging. And throughout all of that, I was so fixated on body image that I was not aware of my surroundings at all. I was not looking for how to solve other people's problems or solve problems that give me joy because I was so fixated on myself. And like, I don't mean that in a narcissistic way, because I think that sometimes that come when you say that, people are like, oh, having an eating disorder is kind of a privileged mental health issue because you're so wrapped up in your body that you're not thinking about other people. And it's a mental illness. It's not that. And it's the most, like, it has the highest mortality rate of any mental health issue. And so it should be taken very seriously. But what I mean is that you're stuck in your own little box and you don't have the passion or the curiosity to explore the problems. And so for me, when you have good body image and when you feel secure in yourself, you're more likely to take risks and be like, oh, I can solve this. I can do that. I'm going to try this. Because you're not worried about, is my body worthy of anything? And it could even be, I think it's more than just body image too, it's your just overall self-worth. Mm-hmm. So, but I think it's one of those things that people may not even realize their full potential until they overcome their own body image issues.
Whoa, that's so good. What does your relationship look like with your body right now?
I have to like constantly remind myself how much better it is than what it was a few years ago. And it's been kind of weird right now because I haven't lifted weights in several weeks.
You're not doing just one arm?
I did it for one workout and then I was like, Mary, just stop. And so like, I feel like my body looks different. And I know that to probably most people it doesn't look different, but then someone will be like, oh, like that's, I just feel like a little different. But then I trying to remind myself that I still feel like me. And so the reflection I see in the mirror does not reflect how I feel on the inside. If I didn't have a mirror in front of me, would I really feel much different? Like, no, I've still been doing a lot of cycling, a lot of dancing. I still feel strong and I still like feel good about myself and feel like I'm attractive. And it's not like I am like, I think that also, it's also kind of hard to do this around the time where everyone is talking about diets and New Year, and
so true.
That was the hard thing because I the holidays are really hard to be around, and like I know a lot of people struggle with how do you turn the conversation away from negative body talk, because people like, I mean, during the holidays they talk about, oh, I shouldn't be eating so much, but like January 1st that New Year hits and everyone's like Whole30, this, that, diet, detox, and you're like, I just want to keep doing what I'm doing and focus on one day at a time. Mm-hmm. And it's, you're like, you can't tell everyone to shut up because that's kind of rude, mm-hmm. but you can learn how to like tone that out. First of all, like just know that they're coming from their own place of insecurity, unfortunately. And just to try to shift the conversation to something more positive. Like just if say, like, I think people often just like to compare food. Like yesterday I was at the office and we have a really nice office where there's food and snacks laid out. And I went to the break room and grabbed an apple because I had some RX bar peanut butter and I wanted an apple with peanut butter. And then, oh, another woman, and I don't even work with her. I don't even know her name. And she goes like, oh, well, I got the chips and you got the apple. And like, there are many apples. Gosh. There are many chips. And I'm just like, yep. And like, it comes from a place of insecurity. Like, she felt like probably I was judging her for taking chips, which didn't even cross my mind to think. I wasn't looking what she was getting. I was just trying to get my apples and go back to work. And I think people, it comes from a place of insecurity and just reminding them, like, it's okay. If you want chips, like, go for it. Like, if we all ate the same things for every single meal, I'm pretty sure it'd be like a dystopian society and we'd all be miserable. So like, if we didn't have variety, then what would we be doing? And just like, I have to remind myself that I had the power to shift a conversation too. I'm not just like the passive person and part of hearing these conversations and just speaking up for it when I need to, and also just tuning it out when I need to.
How have you spoken up about it?
If we get dessert and we're eating dessert and everyone's like, oh, I wonder like how many calories this would be, how much time do I need on a treadmill for this? People say this stuff and I'm just like, I feel like also I've surrounded myself with a lot of people and friends that no one talks like that anymore. Like that was, like, I don't know. I think that the wellness space, we're very lucky that these attitudes have changed. But whenever you hear those and kind of be like, no, it's okay. Treat yourself. You deserve it. It's not the end of the world. It's not that much. And I think people overestimate how like, oh, it's going to ruin your world. It's going to, and like, I feel like I've seen memes where it's even like, oh, some people, they can eat a burger and not gain any weight. I eat a burger and I gain 10 pounds. And like, that's warped. That's body dysmorphia because you're thinking that it's going to change your body in a way it's not. And you're being way too hard on yourself. And just like, just champion for other people whenever they feel insecure. Just be like, no, you're good. You look awesome. You deserve to have this. And just being that positive person. And then whenever, if I'm eating something and someone says about what I'm eating, and then people are like, oh, did you work out this morning? And I'll be like, why? Does it matter? And just like, I don't know, just kind of being sassy and just owning that narrative too. And I think that's also been hard for me to kind of be like, when I came with my book and I'm like, well, now everyone knows I had an eating disorder. And people read my book, like, now you know to what extent I had an eating disorder. That was kind of scary, but just owning it and being like, I'm not the only one. Mm-hmm. We all struggle with that. And you hear how much media talks about food and diets, and just knowing that if all these brands can just preach the different foods you should or shouldn't eat, you can speak up for it yourself.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. What advice do you have for people to almost shift their focus or the scope of their focus? Because I feel like it can be really easy to just focus on, what am I gonna do for my workout today? Like, what am I gonna eat? And just like be focusing on that. How can we still live a healthy lifestyle but not have that be on our minds all the time?
Yes, that is a struggle for a lot of people. I know I had that problem in the past. I think, again, is reminding yourself of your priorities. So like, if you're still trying to figure out goals to set, or if you do like, sometimes I like to do monthly goals for myself, make sure you're allowing balance in those, because so often we're like, we feel like we don't take ownership of our own academic or professional goals, that instead we just focus on what we can't control. And those might be our workout and our diet. And that comes from a place where we feel like we can't control our lives. So we focus on the little things we can't control, and that's leading to being a control freak. And we don't want to do that. And so I think that if you're setting two fitness wellness goals, make sure you're also setting two personal goals that are unrelated to fitness or wellness. And make sure you're setting two career or school goals that are unrelated from wellness. Like, make sure you feel like you have a well-rounded plate. So you're covering work, life, health. Because you need health and wellness goals to be your best self, absolutely. And those small changes do add up. But at the end of the day, your workout, maybe an hour of your day, 4% of your day. And then you have your meals, which take up for how much time of your day? Like, what percentage of that is in? So if you're focusing all of your energy into a very small amount of your day, you're taking away from other time you could be spent doing bigger goals. And like, you don't need to be eating all day. Think of all of the stuff you like. I feel like sometimes I'll be in the zone working on a project and I'll go a few hours without eating and I'll be like, what? I didn't know I could go that long without eating. And like, my body was fine. And then I'm like, okay, time to eat a big meal. And it's okay. Instead of being like, is it time for my snack yet? I told myself I could have one snack today. Is it time for that snack yet? I'm waiting for that snack. I really want that snack. I know we've all been there, and it's hard. And I think you just got to have to look at the bigger picture and just hold yourself accountable and say, I want to accomplish more than just making my body my temple. Because yes, you live in your body, is your temple, but you do other stuff in it too. You want to live a full balanced life in that temple.
Absolutely. I think something that has really helped me is just figuring out what I want my workout routine to be that Sunday. In the past, I never really had specific times that I wanted to work out or classes I wanted to go to. I just be like, well, I just want to see how I feel. Like, I had such great intentions for it, right? It's like, yes. I don't know how I'm going to feel on Friday. I want to decide on Friday. But it's like, that it doesn't work that way in a real life, right? Like, yes. For me, I realized if I was to wait until that day to decide, I was just thinking about when I'm going to work out, when am I going to feel good, and it just took up way too much brain space. Yes. So instead, setting it on Sunday, and if for some reason something drastically changes on Friday and maybe I don't feel like working out, I won't, and that's totally okay. Or if I'm like, oh, I am actually going to go to SoulCycle with Sarah and SJ, like, that's totally okay too, and not dwelling on it. But that really helped me free up a lot of space.
Yes, for sure. The decision fatigue that comes with so much of it. And that's why I value routine so much. I think that often people are like, I don't want to live a routine life. That's boring. I want to be spontaneous and fun. Mm-hmm. But you don't want to make constantly making small decisions that interfere with doing those big, fun life things. And so the more you're able to narrow down those decisions early on in the week, like, okay, I know I'm going to be eating my meals here. I'm doing these workouts. Sometimes I will plan out my outfits and I just get made fun of so much for that. But I'm like,
I love it.
I'm just not as fashionable as I used to be, so I don't care as much. But whenever I do want to feel good, is taking the decision out of it, especially early in the morning when you're not maybe your best, you're a little groggy, you're kind of annoyed you had to get up or whatever it is. So when you are able to reduce decision fatigue and just get done with, and then also not feeling like you derailed your plans if something gets messed up. Like, oh my goodness, if you didn't get to work out on Wednesday, it's okay because you still have your workout plan for Thursday. Mm-hmm. Or if you allowed a rest day on Thursday and you missed your workout on Wednesday, you just switch the days. I'm like, oh, well, today's not rest day. It's fine. It worked out. And just knowing that your plan can be flexible and you can be flexible mm-hmm. with routine. It's mm-hmm. not the end all be all.
Decision fatigue is just such a real thing. That's what I'm trying to get better at.
Yeah, I think that's also a lot of it ties into creativity as well, because if you are, the problems you're trying to solve are how to get your workout in for the day, then of course you're not going to have time for that. And it's maybe not, that doesn't have to be obsessive or an eating disorder or anything. It just means that you're just frazzled and need to just decide.
Just make a decision.
Decide, yes.
Make a decision.
And the thing is also, if 1 week you don't make the decision, you're like, that felt weird. I'm just not feeling the morning workout. The next week, you can change it. Mm-hmm. You're not married to it.
You are on social media so much, and this, of course, has a major impact on our confidence. So I'd love to hear how you work with social media and how you utilize it for its benefits.
Yeah, my attitude towards social media has changed a lot in the last year, because I think about where I was a year ago, and I feel like I was building my brand. And that's kind of how I felt during college. And then through my book, it was like, okay, until I have, because I've always known I want a career in marketing, and that often includes social media. So it's like, okay, if I can't prove myself on my own brand, how can I prove to anyone else that I can make their brand really good? So I felt like I had a duty to build this social media brand. Like, I didn't really care about followers. For me, it's always been more about engagement. And I think that's why I love it, because I feel like I've made so many friends through social media and that I've become real life friends. So it's a great tool. I don't regret ever doing that at all. But then when it starts to feel like work and it feels inauthentic, and I'm very aware whenever it starts to feel a little icky and not like me. And so in the last year, like, my books kind of died down. I don't say died down, but like, I just not trying to promote it all the time anymore. I'm like, I just want to be like a real person and just post because I feel like it. And not feeling like I'm trying to present a persona, but it's more so just not even a reflection of me, because I think that often people feel obligated to show every side of them so people see the full picture. But I'm going to feel misunderstood no matter what, because people, they look for themselves in whatever you post. They look for things that resonate with them. They make that assumption and they connect with that. And it's not necessarily good or bad, but when you let that affect you, then it can be bad. And you're like, why does everyone keep thinking that? That's not me. And like, that's why I think a lot of people are like, you're so social, you're so outgoing. And I'm like, no, I'm not. I'm like, I like sitting at home. Why do you think that? And then it's like, but people latch on to, they think it looks like I am very included. And I, that's something I kind of realized in therapy a lot. I felt very excluded for like most of my life. I always felt like I was an oddball out. I was like weird. And that's kind of why I like latched onto my introverted tendencies, because I had this fear of being excluded. And I think now in Chicago, I've found a community where I never feel excluded, and it's amazing. But then I forget that so many people still don't feel that same sense of belonging. And I'm like, I want to make sure they feel included too. I want to make sure everyone feels like they can have a seat at the table. And so trying to make sure the people I'm connecting with on social media, okay, I'm connecting with them in real life, or I'm building more than just a banter back and forth through DMs. And just also not taking everything at face value. And I went on, I kind of tried a couple different approaches to stay off social media the last couple months. Over the holidays, I just deleted the apps from my phone. And usually I'm a type where I'm like, no, you should have self-control. You don't need to delete them. But I'm like, no, I gotta delete them. And it was good for me just to like, I don't need to stay caught up on everyone all the time. Mm-hmm. I need to stay caught up with me and my feelings and myself. And so it was really good for me to kind of take a break from that. And I went Marie Kondo on my following. I unfollowed like 1,500 people in 2 days.
How did you do that? How long did that take you also? Oh my gosh.
I love taking baths. I know I've said on the last podcast. I love baths. I'm a proud supporter of baths. And I was in there for like 2 hours unfollowing. And I was like, I've been here for 2 hours. I need to go to bed. And like, Instagram does not allow you to do it all at once, because then they'll stop doing it. Yeah, you have to break it up into spurts. And like, that's why.
How many people at a time?
I think like 200 at a time.
Wow.
Maybe.
Interesting.
So you can, there are apps you can do it, and they'll like do it automatically for you. And like, because that's why I was inspiring all my coworkers. I'm like, how many people can you unfollow? Because we're all like, this is a ridiculous amount of people to keep up with. Mm-hmm. And so we're all kind of challenge ourselves, who can we unfollow? And I think also, you can still be friends without following on social media. Like, I think people, we know that social media is fake, but it's, if you're not following someone else, ooh, you just cut them out. And it's like, no, like, mm-hmm. you're still a human. I just choosing what I want on my feed. And it's so nice now. It'll be like, it'll tell me you're all caught up. I've never had that. It tells me I'm all caught up.
For what? For what?
From like on my feed. It'll tell you if you've seen everything.
Oh, whoa.
I know.
Mind blown.
So I've been on social media less, because I'll go on it. And I'll be like, you're caught up. And I'm like, oh, I don't need to check it for, because I feel like whenever you follow thousands of people, you're like, I'm never caught up. There's always something I'm missing. Even if you don't care, it just, you feel like, it's like that feeling of when you have 1,000 emails in your inbox, you're never caught up. You're overwhelmed constantly. And so when you cut that out, and like, I mean, I still go and look at people's posts. Like I look at dance videos, I don't follow them because I don't want to see it on my feed all the time, because I'm not always having my headphones in. I don't need like rap music blowing at work. Right. I'm like, oops, I wasn't supposed to be on my phone, but I am. And so I think just drawing those boundaries, and like, it's not a personal thing. You just gotta clean it up. You'll feel better for it. And then like, just also, I know like in 6 months, I'm probably going to go through it again. Like, who have I unfollowed that I don't want to see? And
So how many follow, or what would it be? How many people are you following now?
Like 400.
Okay.
Which is still, that's a ton.
Right.
Like, I think my coworker sent me an article that's like 150 is a magic number of how many people you can really connect with. Like, you've got, I think like 5 close friends, 50 friends, and then like 100 acquaintances. Otherwise, your brain is like, you're not going to remember names. You won't know anyone. And it's so hard whenever you want to network and you want to just meet everybody. You know that people are really cool and you want to do it all and be a good friend. But like, you can't do that. Mm. And so even though like technology and social media has enabled us to be so hyper connected, we got to keep boundaries with ourselves. And also know that like when you draw boundaries, you're able to have deeper connections. So like, I may not follow as many people, but if I don't know their name and I've been following them forever and you only know their username, like, you, like, I feel like I follow a lot of people. I'm like, okay, I know we go to a lot of the same events. I know their Instagram handle, but I couldn't tell you their face or name if I saw them in person. And I'm like, I'm sorry, I gotta unfollow you. I'm like, I would love to get to know you more in person, but this like this halfway social media, halfway in person, it's not working for me. And you and like I think I've lost like, because I tried to check, but I keep forgetting. I've lost like 20 followers since then, and I know.
Well, because people have those apps that they check who
followed you. And it's like, it's kind of funny. Like, I had, there was one guy who messaged me, and like, I've seen him probably once in Chicago, and like, he's just been a friend, like, mm-hmm. in a lot of the same fitness events. And he was like, oh, wow, you unfollowed me, harsh. And I'm like, I haven't seen any of your posts on my feed in forever. And like, maybe you don't post, maybe you do. I don't see any of it.
Right.
And I'm like, I still see you on other social media platforms. Yeah. And like, I still feel connected with you. So I'm like, sorry, we're like still cool. And he was like, man, I liked your content too. Well, and he unfollowed me. And I was like,
oh my God.
And I'm like, well, you can still follow me if you like my content. Like, you're taking this too personally. And I'm like, I still see like his tweets and he's hilarious. I just don't see him on the grid. And like, it's fine. But I had a lot of people that would like unfollow me to see if I followed them, unfollowed them, and they'd follow me back because they realized that I was still following them. I'm like, y'all are petty.
Oh my God.
It's so silly. And like, I think that's why I'm so fascinated by digital behaviors and psychology, because we say that these like traditional psychology, it transfers over to digital, but it's very different. And like, people get weird about things, and it's just, you have to remember like, life exists outside of it.
Yeah, that is so interesting. I'm so curious to see the research that will come out 10 years from now, because all this stuff really is still so new.
It is, and that's like, most of my closest friends and family don't follow me on Instagram, or like, they don't have Instagram, they never check it, and like, so it's funny how a lot of them don't see stuff, but I talk with them regularly, so they don't need to see it, you know? And so it's kind of like, are you really connecting with people? And yeah, I think people act very differently, and it's going to be very interesting to see how it's affected us and how we build our relationships and how we define our deep connections.
Yeah. How do you want social media to play a role in your life this upcoming year?
That's a good question. I think that I want it to help me maybe get stronger relationships with one-off friends, like peers. There's a lot of friends that I've met through like mutual friends. I like to say that we are friends through the transit of property. And so if like, hey, you're best friends or you're good friends with this person, I'm good friends with this person, so obviously we have something in common. And so following them and getting to know them more, and then being like, let's talk, let's get your number, let me know when you're in Chicago, let's hang out, and trying to build those relationships more, because I have found a lot of good friends that way, and I don't want to be like, no new friends, I'm done making, like, and just trying to be open to that. And I think also trying to expand with other communities. So I've made a post recently on Instagram, and a lot of good feedback from it. One of the dance classes I go to is it's called Healthy Hood in Pilsen, mm-hmm. which is like more on the southwest side of Chicago. And when I first went to classes there, I was the only white girl. It was just very different from the very much very white north side of Chicago. And I've met a lot of close friends there, and kind of realizing like, we have a lot in common, and I'm just kind of in my own little bubble, and I have to actively put myself out there and become more involved with communities that I want to reach out to. Like, it's not going to come to me. It's not going to fall on my lap. I have to work out and try to reach other people. And I think that's like kind of, I still want to blog and write, but I think that I want to keep doing the run your world and show other people and how they run their worlds, but then that aren't just like me. Like, mm-hmm. okay, someone's running their world in the same way that I am. I want to expose more diversity and get more stories out there. And just like, I think the more you hear about people succeeding and just struggling, both go hand in hand. You can't succeed without struggling. And hearing other people's stories, people will be more inspired to take their own risks. So I think trying to use social media to connect with others in that way.
Dude, have you ever struggled with social anxiety?
Yes. Yeah, I think that it's gotten so much better as being an adult. But growing up, again, I always felt excluded, and like, I never wanted to put myself out there because I always felt like the weirdo, and I'm still terrified of teenagers to this day. I think that teens are really scary. So just saying, I don't like them. And I think it just comes from this fear that people won't like me. And so I want to try to do everything I can to please them. And instead of being like, I want to connect with people for being different. I don't want to be around like-minded people all the time. And I think that social anxiety, I've learned personally to just remember that we're all humans and we all want to connect with other people. And so, like, whenever I go to an event, and I go to stuff by myself a lot, like, I travel a lot alone. I just enjoy being by myself and not being afraid to spark up a conversation.
How do you do that?
I mean, what would I talk about with a close friend when I go somewhere?
So if I'm just sitting over there and you see me and you're like, oh, I want to talk to this person, like, what would you say?
I don't know if I would, like, cold go up to someone and just be, like, kind of, like, feel like I was hitting on them. I don't know if I would do that. But, like, I'm trying to think. In an elevator, I'm always, like, trying to talk or say something. Yeah, I feel like I practice, like, elevator talk, or, like, in the hallway at work. Like, even if I don't know someone, I see them walking. We're still coworkers. I just don't know what they're doing. But, like, I try to smile and say hi, or we're in the break room just, like, talk about something that's on TV, not about food. But, like, I think just practicing whenever you're in those social situations, it's good. And, like, I wish that when I was in college more, I would have practiced it more. Like, because you're around so many people in college. Like, in the library, in your classes, and just learning, like, you can talk to someone. And, like, doesn't mean you're best friends either. Like, I think often there's this, like, obligation. Like, if I talk to someone, they're going to have to know my name. They need my card. They need my social media handle. And, like, you can just talk with someone for the sake of talking to someone and being nice.
Right.
Like, I'm trying to think of an example when I was traveling recently. This is a good example. I was in New York in October, and I stayed with my sister for a couple days, and then I was with one of my best friends lives there too, and then we were going to go to Soho House on the Sunday to go to the pool because it was, like, unseasonably warm for October, and so I was like, we're going to the pool. But she was sick. I think I got her sick because I had strep again. I had a lot of strep last year. I just don't know why. So I went to the Soho alone, and I'm by the pool. And, like, I want to talk to people, but I was, like, a little scared too. And then I was reading a book, and then the guy behind me was like, you read that book so fast. And I was like, you're watching me read? And I got, like, a little insecure doing that. And then he said it was another design thinking book, and he was like, I actually am a graduate from Stanford's design school, and he's my professor. I took that class that you're like,
whoa.
Because the book I was reading was a class. And so we were talking about that, and I was like, how did it help you? And then, like, he was with his friend, and then so I was asking them about, like, being in New York and what it was like, and just sparking conversation with them. And it was a reminder, like, oh, I can just have those conversations. And, like, I probably wouldn't have started that conversation because I did have strep at the time and I wasn't feeling very good. But then, like, later that day, I was at dinner by myself, and, like, people think that eating alone is like a freak, and I don't even care. I'm like, well, whatever. I'm eating my own meal. I'm good. I'm happy. And then just, like, talking with the waiter. And I think people often dehumanize every social encounter. Whether it's, like, your coffee barista.
That's such a good point.
Whether you're, someone working, and people just, I think it comes from social anxiety. Like, you don't want to engage in conversation because you feel like you're going to embarrass yourself. But really, it makes them feel like they're not worthy of conversation. I think we have to just kind of, like, just talk naturally and, like, not being afraid of being yourself.
I think about that all the time, especially people, for example, like, I was in Equinox the other day, and the person who was cleaning the bathroom, and I was, like, thinking about it, I'm like, oh my gosh, like, all these people are just, like, walking past, they're not saying anything, and so I, like, said hi, and I'm like, thank you so much, like, said, but it was enough, right? She smiled, and, like, we had an exchange.
Yeah.
It's crazy. You're right. Like, people are dehumanizing.
I think if you just ask someone, hey, how are you doing today? Or, like, oh, like, even if someone opened the door for you, like, oh, thank you. Hope you have a great day. And just those little things. And, like, I'm guilty, but I also don't like when people say, like, oh, how are you? I'm fine. How are you? But, like, when someone asks you that, challenge yourself to be honest and be, like, maybe just, like, a little snippet of your day. Like, you know what? My morning wasn't so good, but the afternoon's been great. How's yours been? And just, like, people like energy. And if you close off your energy, they're going to close off their own energy. It's got to be, like, mutual. And if someone doesn't respond well to it, no, well, like, You're sharing your light. You're sharing your positivity.
Yeah.
Ooh, I love it.
Couple more questions. What has been your greatest lesson on creativity?
I think my biggest lesson on creativity has been like not being afraid to take risks, not being afraid to fall. But I think also just learning that your creativity will evolve over time and that it like it ebbs and flows. And I think that as a writer, I used to like feel a lot like, oh, I have writer's block. And now I don't feel that anymore just because I try to lean into my intuition when I do want to write. And if I'm not feeling like writing, I just don't. I'll try to do some other creative things like dancing or trying a new class or just even like crafting even. I don't do that too often, but sometimes I just like decide I want to do something in my apartment and just make a craft out of it. And just realizing that creativity is going to look different over time and that also you don't have to explain it to anyone else. I think that everyone's creative process is different. And then I used to sometimes feel embarrassed for like doing my own thing and just like, just kind of go with it. It's your own. It's you. Just do it.
What's a risk that you want to take in the next couple months?
I think my creative risk, I want to be more confident whenever I am in my work. So I think that a lot of times kind of like I'm trying to improve my consultative practices because a lot of work is like telling people what I think they should do. And I often say that halfway, I'll be like, well, I think you could kind of do this, but you could also kind of do that. And I just kind of, instead I want to decide and say, you know what? I'm going to own it. I'm going to say, you should do this and committing to that and not being afraid to have a firm stance on things. Cause I think that I have a lot of very indecisive friends, love them, but sometimes it makes me feel like whenever I am decisive that it's a little aggressive and a little too intense. And so I try to like subdue my intensity and be like, well, I don't know. And I want to own my decisiveness a little bit more and just kind of take the risk of like, maybe it's not right. Because like I think often we go indecisive to be like a disclaimer. Mm-hmm. Like, well, you could do this, but I don't want to say that in case it's the wrong answer because yeah, I don't want the failure to come on me. I want to like... But it's like, nope, like, I really think we should do this. If it doesn't work out, we'll do this and this instead. But let's go with this and see what happens. Let's track it. And I think I'm going to have to prep myself for those conversations. And just, I think I'll take more planning in advance to kind of like, it's like you're repeating your head. It's your narrative and just like getting used to that conversation.
Ooh, I'm going to do that too. I like that. Because you shouldn't feel shame for knowing what you want.
Right? And, like, I think also knowing, no one knows what they're doing. Like, we're all kind of figuring it out as we go. So if anyone is decisive and if they're arrogant and they're like, oh, this is definitely going to work. I'm sure of it. Maybe you're a little wary of that. Yeah. But I think a lot of people are like, no, I've done my research. I think that when I talk about risks, I say that they're very well calculated. I measure the cost versus benefits. I decide, is this risk really worth taking? Is it really worth what I think I could get out of it? And I, even though I'm very creative, I'm also very analytical and I like see those in my mind. Like, and so I don't know if I've said on this podcast, but I was a math major for 2 years. So I was like always, growing up before in high school, I was much into journalism, writing, much more of that creative type. And then something flipped to me and I was like, I'm going to go into STEM. And that was influenced by my parents. But I was like, I won't make any money in journalism. I need to go do math or physics. And so I did math and I did it for 2 years and like I could do it, but I was bored out of my mind. I was like, that's when I started trying to look for other passion projects. And I was like, I should try to like tie these together and do a career that I actually enjoy. And now it's funny that I'm still in the STEM field, but I'm writing and being creative for a STEM field. So it's funny how it all worked out. Like I didn't know that my job existed when I like 10 years ago, 5 years ago. Gosh. So how could I know that? I just had to kind of follow my passions. And then, so when I'm able to kind of have that analytical, like I won't take a risk without knowing that I do have I have a plan B if it does mess up, and that's okay. That's good. And then if I didn't have a plan B, I would still figure it out. Like, I love, like, everything is figure outable. Like, we've done it so far. That's what makes us creative, because we're solving problems.
Ugh, so true. Last question. What other tools or resources have helped you with being confident and living your best life?
Ooh. So resources or tools, I think just being very self-aware. And that's what mindfulness and meditation looks different for everybody. I still swear by the 5-minute journal. That's like, I want to practice that like every day for the rest of my life if I could. And it's just practicing gratitude, practicing affirmations, just constantly checking in with yourself and then knowing that it's going to look different every day. And so I personally don't like sitting to meditate. I'd rather go on a run and just let my mind be free. Because that's a little bit different than, like, if I'm doing a workout class and kind of focusing on what's in front of me and kind of tuning out the world. Because there's a difference between, like, being mindful and being on your mind versus just turning off and letting yourself relax and rest. So I think just finding your own mindfulness practice, and it's going to slowly weave its way into your other areas of life. I really do recommend therapy. I wish I could have done it sooner. I think that you're able to really have a sounding board. And like, I mean, I have a lot of friends who are like, you can talk to me anytime, but it's good to have a professional who's like out of it and doesn't feel like they have, like, I don't feel like I need to be a shoulder to cry on for her. Mm-hmm. But like, there've been times where I just cry for a whole hour and we just talk through tears. And so it's good to have that. So for me, I think that was, I wish that I would have been encouraged to see a therapist sooner. Cause I think that it helps you also get good advice, because some friends, they mean well, they don't give good advice. And like, it's not their fault, but you probably don't give good advice all the time either. So it's good to have like a professional give a better stance. And then other tools, I think finding your own creative outlet is really important. For me, it's journaling. I think that everyone has their own way to express how they're feeling. And I think finding a couple is really good too, if you can find more than one, and just so you know how to self-soothe. So if you do catch yourself being really anxious, really worked up, really upset, and instead of always turning to a workout, finding something else that's a way for you to calm down and remind yourself you're okay, you are worthy, you can get through this, and you're going to love yourself the whole way, even through the bad parts.
I love this conversation. Oh, thank you so much for coming back on the
podcast. Thank you for having me. It's always so fun to talk with you.
Where can girls learn more about you?
You can find me on Instagram, ITS Mary Kay. It's Mary Kay. I'm also a tweeter. My website is marykay.com. Find me on anything.
And working out with you.
Yes, you can find me working out. I teach at Energy Fitness in River North, Chicago. And then I also teach at Sweat Fitness Studios in Gold Coast and Lincoln Park. And then I'm also on the Sweat Working app. So if you download the app, and there's a free trial if you find me. Ooh, yeah, and
that up.
Yes, I've got, I haven't done, those workouts are like a year old, but I've got a good a booty burnout and an ab workout, and you can do those anywhere. And they also have some really good meditations on the app too. That's what I use it for.
Really?
Jason and Brett have some good meditations on there.
Oh my gosh, amazing. Yeah. Okay, I have to check that out. Well, thank you so much again, and make sure to check out the book Creative Confidence if you like this conversation. And I'll talk to you guys next week. Bye.
Hey, Charge Girls, good morning. Yes, I'm talking to you. It's time to get charged up, because this day is anew. The sky says hi and it's bluer than blue. The sun is shining and all the birds are chirping too. Today is the best day to be alive. The miracles appear once you open up your eyes. Surprise, time to keep living your dreams. So get up and join the rest of your charge team.